morning, everyone. Welcome to the February 9th, 2013 meeting of the Fish and Wildlife, the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. Good to see you all. We have quite a few people who've signed up for open public input this morning, which is sort of unusual for a Saturday. So I want to welcome you all. Looking forward to hearing what you have to tell us. Also wanted to announce at the beginning of the meeting that we are going to switch item 13 and item 12. So we will take up miscellaneous and meeting debrief before the executive session. So anyone who wants to hear what we have to say during that debrief does not have to wait around for 2 hours while we are in executive session. Okay, so item number 10, open public input. Quickly, a rundown on the commission rules. We ask that citizens come forward to the front table, sit in front of the microphone, speak into the microphone. We allow 3 minutes for your presentations. And when you hear the beeping noise, that means your 3 minutes is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. And if you don't, just to be fair to everyone, I have to interrupt you and ask you to. So I will call you up 2 at a time and to make things more efficient. First two, Steve Hastings and Burley Cobert. You'd come forward, please. And Mr. Hastings.
Thank you, Commission. So my name is Steve Hastings. I represent myself, but I also happen to be the president of the Mount St. Helens Bassmasters. We're a bass fishing club located in Southwest Washington. Also a member of the state, Washington State Bass Federation. So what I wanted to talk about was the special rules discussion. I know you had a public hearing yesterday. Of course, it was during my work hours, so there's no way for me to get here, and I would have loved to have spoken then. I'll try to go slow enough to make it comprehensible, but fast enough to get my points in. My issue with the is really centered around the removal of limits on specifically bass, walleye, and the catfish, complete removal of those limits between McNeil and Chief Joseph, and that to me is where the issue lies. My understanding right now is that Oregon isn't even looking at this. I understand that this is being pushed by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and I also fish. I should tell you, I grew up in Toledo, so I spent lots of hours wandering the Calis River and the Tootle and all over in that area. And so I fish for salmon and steelhead. I spend a lot of time fishing when I get the opportunity. So I really feel like the legislature or the rules change that's being proposed is reactionary. I don't think it has anything to do with solving the real issue. Only maybe in a microscopic way. I know that the concern regarding salmon in the Columbia River and the lack of returning salmon is really the issue. And the problems are comprehensive. It's never just one thing. You know, there's dams and so on and so forth. But I think everybody sitting at that table understands that over harvest in the ocean is the real serious problem. When fish are not coming back and they're being caught before they get back is the real serious issue. Keep in mind, bass have been in the Columbia River for 130 years. The problem that we're talking about is more of a new problem and not a 100 years ago problem. 130 years of the cohabitation of these fish in this same body of water. We know that all fish species predate. That you're not going to get away from the fact that they. They primarily don't operate in the same range, and obviously the problems of the pike minnow and that kind of stuff are well documented. But I think you're attacking the wrong thing, my issue is more about no removing the limit at all. I don't have a problem with people harvesting some fish. Removing the limit's going to bring on unintended consequences, and I think you guys know that. I have another problem also, and there's a part of the river that's shared with Oregon. Whatever rules go in place need to be shared with Oregon, right? We can't have one. That is not much time.
Commissioner Duvia?
Madam Chair, do you keep your fish or do you catch and release?
We're in the catch and release club. Yeah, so, and it isn't that we never harvest. We do harvest at times for group gathering, fish fries, and that kind of stuff. So we do harvest, but we try to be really selective about it. We tend to keep fish that are more, that create fillets that are about pan size, so that 11 to 12 inch fish. Obviously, putting back the big females, that won't happen in a no limit situation.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mark Byrne,
yes,
please. Mr. Cooper.
Madam Chairman and Director, members of the board, we have a hoof rot problem. It started in the 1990s. I shot bull elk this year down in Margaret. It had hoof rot. I cut the leg off and had my son deliver it upstairs. I hope it didn't end up in a cafeteria.
It did.
I spend quite a bit of money on hunting licenses. So I'm representing me as a hunter and a spender of money in the state. We have an economic problem with elk. Elk draw people into the state of Washington. Elk in our area of Washington, in this part, is a prime resource. So it's a financial as well as a natural resource. And I want to know, what is the commission doing to solve this problem before it spreads completely out of the 9 or 10 counties it's in now? I understand it's all the way over to the eastern Washington and the feeding areas. I think it's probably going into deer. I don't know about that one, but I think it is probably. Where are we putting our resources when this is going to have a big economic impact on Washington, on visitors, and on me as a hunter? Thank you.
Thank you.
I know I'm not going to get an answer.
Typically, we don't respond because it would take a lot of time and we have a tight agenda.
I understand, but I hope we respond in the future.
Commissioner Duvia?
You might like to, we did discuss that last night in our wildlife committee, and we are working on that. We are aware of the issue, and we're very concerned about it. And we can't have time now to discuss it, but we're on it. And we're going to try to do our best to get rid of it.
As a hunter, I thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming. Mark Smith? Mr. Byrne?
Good morning. My name is Mark Byrne. I'm the Conservation Director for Bass in Washington State, and represent the 6,000 Bass members who live and reside in Washington State. Also, in those short terms, also representing a lot of Bass members in Oregon and Idaho who fish the Columbia River. I'm here to talk about the same thing Steve was talking about, the smallmouth bass being deregulated on the Columbia River. The smallmouth bass have been in Washington State for 130 years, and just in the last few years or so, you know, it has been a large push to change the regulations on them. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has done testing in the past. Steve Jackson, who is one of the managers in the Warm Water Division, I think he's retired now, did testing in Lake Washington where they electroshocked the bass and took an accounting of their stomach contents. The bass consumed, but the salmon and trout did not even make up the top 10 in what the bass were consuming. And because bass are, you know, pretty much genetically engineered to feed off the same things, you know, you got to think it's going to be exactly the same in the Columbia River. The exceptions would be that in areas around the dam, you know, where you've got juvenile fish going through the dam structures, it's a target-rich environment. But it's going to be the same for all the predatory fish. The adult salmon and trout are going to be feeding on the juvenile salmon and trout that come through there. In the same way. Also, I think that removing the regulations would in some ways somewhat decreased the number of smallmouth bass in the river, and would have an effect, I think, on the northern pike minnow, which has been proved to be a predator of the juvenile salmon and trout. Northern pike minnow does make in the top 10 list of the type of things that both largemouth and smallmouth bass like to eat in Lake Washington and in the tributaries and, of course, the Columbia River. Secondly, you know, smallmouth bass in the Columbia River, Columbia River is considered to be one of the top 10 smallmouth bass fisheries in the country. It gets a lot of press. It's in newspapers. It's in magazines as a destination place to go. The communities along the Columbia River, both on the Oregon side and the Washington side, depend on this bass fishery for their economic livelihood. You know, it's as bass fishermen, we spend a great deal of money to pursue this sport. We also spend a lot of money in the communities. We've had bass tournaments on the Columbia River that in 4 days' time have brought $750,000 into a community. It's a very important aspect of, you know, a lot of these communities' welfare. You know, when you take this away and when you damage this fishery, you know, it's going to damage these communities. It's going to be a large umbrella type of factor is going to cover a lot of other issues along the way there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Brady Wojtowicz. Okay, Mr. Smith.
Hey, my name is Mark Smith. I own and operate Eco Park Resort at Mount St. Helens. I've been in the Mount St. Helens area for over 54 years, which extends before the eruption. I'd like to thank the chairman and the commission today for the opportunity to speak, and I'd like to request that the commission do address the pandemic outbreak of hoof rot in southwest Washington currently. In the 1990s, the Department of Fish and Wildlife reported few cases in one game unit and one county. Today, 18 years later, we have 21 game units affected and 10 counties. Okay. The effect of the elk in those areas are believed to be over 55% of the animals. It is further disturbing when you read that the Department of Fish and Wildlife does not know the cause of the disease, nor have they actively looking for one. Their study information was collected from necropsies of 9 animals back in 2010. These reports detail some low levels of minerals, but do not show anything other than poor body conditions for this disease and this infection. Many hunters this year harvested elk, discovered that hoof rot. They were concerned about eating the meat. When asking the Department of Fish and Wildlife, they were told to use their nose. If these animals were domestic cows, you would not be permitted to sell them for consumption until they were cured. But with wild elk, it's safe to eat diseased meat. I'm not sure about that. The speed that this disease has spread should concern all of us. While we are not aware of the cause, we do know that it appears to only affect elk at this time, not domestic animals or deer. We can also assume this disease is man-made, since it just appeared in the 1990s. We need to ask ourselves what has changed in our environment that has allowed this to be triggered. And these animals were under private ownership, criminal charges and fines would be brought against the owner. For we have laws against this humane treatment of animals. Imagine the pain and suffering these large animals, unable to put weight on their feet or their hooves, yet during hunting seasons and that, they not only have to walk, they have to run and escape, and still under poor body conditions. The Department of Wildlife has been reactive with this disease, and the results speak for themselves. So I ask you, the Game Commission, to take whatever action necessary to be proactive, make hoof rot the number one priority for the Department of Fish and Wildlife big game manager, assign him the task to identify the cause, develop the treatment and solutions for a cure of this pandemic disease. I also noticed that in the executive session you're going to be addressing the RCW Code 4230110 for the performance of public employees. I would ask that you look at this 18 years of management of this hoof rot pandemic disease now as part of your evaluation for these public employees. I thank you for the time.
Thank you. Bruce Barnes. Did I get your name right?
Wojtowicz.
Okay, thank you. You can go ahead.
My name is Brady Wojtowicz. I live at 14,000 Spirit Lake Highway in Tootle, Washington. I'd like to thank the chairman and commission for the opportunity to speak today. People ask me if I see elk with hoof rot. I tell them yes. Every day, at least 50% of the elk that I see appear to be infected, some having only a minor limp and some will not use the leg infected. Seeing such pain and suffering by so many animals makes me angry because I can't help them and I would like to, and because it doesn't appear that the WDFW is doing anything to help them. I'm told that they are wild, and it is hard to treat wild animals, yet the WDFW collars, tracks, and captures elk. So why can they not come up with a treatment plan? But first they would have to identify what is causing it before any kind of treatment plan could be introduced. In reading the WDFW website, they state that hoof rot was first appeared in 1995. In 18 years, they have not been able to identify what kind of hoof rot it is or what is causing it. This year, I shot my first elk, and I was excited and proud to have been so lucky to harvest such a beautiful animal. When I got it, I was disappointed to find that it had hoof rot. It made me feel sad that I had killed an animal that was crippled. It didn't feel like sport hunting to me. In skinning the animal, I again was disappointed. The body was smaller on the hoof rot side, and it seemed to be in poor condition, and there was a smell coming from the infected leg. I lost a good amount of the meat. I think it's a joke for the WDFW to tell people to use their nose to determine if the meat is safe to eat, or how much they should cut off. This being my first elk hunting experience, why would I want to support the WDFW by purchasing another elk tag next season? I'm here today to ask the commission to make this hoof rot problem the number one concern for a WDFW to solve and prevent, so that if I'm fortunate enough to harvest another elk in the future, it would be disease-free. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, we have a couple more people who've signed up to testify about hoof rot, so we'll have a little conversation about that with staff. Okay, Edward Barnes, would you come forward? Okay, Mr. Barnes.
Good morning, Director, Chair, and the Commission of the Fish and Wildlife here in Washington State. My name is Bruce Barnes. I live at 4101 Northeast 50th Avenue, Vancouver, Washington. I'm a lifetime hunter, lifetime outdoor enthusiast, but I'd like a raise of hands here in this commission of who stands for higher education in this commission. I'd like everybody to raise their hands that are for higher education.
I think we all are.
Absolutely. How many major universities do we have in this state? How many people do we have going to those universities that are going to be biologists, going to be scientists, going to be veterinarians? Okay. When the pandemic of blue tongue disease happened in Colorado, what did they do? They solved the problem by partnering with other people, universities. They partnered with the Corps of Engineers. They partnered with other people to fix this problem. We've got a pandemic here, which is a health and safety issue to anybody hunting these animals. You cannot sell dairy products with a cow that's got hoof rot. You cannot sell meat to the store. The butchers will not even take these animals if they ask you if they've had hoof rot. We've got a major problem here. It's not only animal cruelty, but you're stealing from the people that are buying hunting licenses. This is a crime. It's a crime. I don't want to see these animals limping around, and I certainly don't want them spreading to other states. So we need to fix this problem. I'm here to ask what I can do in a positive way, short of going to the courts and having a class action lawsuit to get this thing fixed. What do we need to do to fix this? I mean, we're all smart people in here. You know, one thing my dad taught me is common sense isn't common. You know what I mean? Everybody in this room obviously has been put in these positions because they have common sense, you know? And the other thing that I've got to talk about here is now that I'm a person of disabilities, I broke my neck badly in September. I realized by reading through your disabled hunters thing that there's really no opportunities for people over 65 and disabled hunters to be able to get back in the forest to even be able to hunt. So if you guys could work on those two things and make this hoof rot situation your priority, you know, I mean, nobody wants to see these animals limping around. And, I mean, think if somebody smashed your ankle and you walked on it till it completely rotted off to a bloody stub, how painful that would be. I don't want to see that. Even if, you know, I only get to hunt these animals for not even 2 weeks a year. The rest of the time I'm recreationally appreciating just seeing them. But we're hunting them to death. I mean, their poor body condition, the length of the seasons, we got to do something different here. We're better than this. You know, we can send people to the moon in spaceships. We need to do something different. Science is based on facts and data. We need those facts and data. Please, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Robert Brown, come forward. Thank you, Mr. Barnes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members of the Commission. My name is Ed Barnes. I live at 4009 Northeast 50th Avenue. I've been hunting in the state of Washington since I was 9 years old. I'll be 80 August 19th of this year. And it really concerns me for the first time when I go up there elk hunting that I'm afraid to shoot an elk and take the meat and eat the meat because of the hoof rot and the stories that's now appearing in a national magazine. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has now got this. Everybody's talking about what this problem is, what's going on. You know, if the wherewithal, if you folks don't have the wherewithal to solve this, I know that the Agriculture Department of the United States or Food and Drug Administration, whenever a problem like this happens, it takes them about a month or maybe a month and a half. They go out, they find out where the source is on the cow, the chicken, whatever else it is, because they know if they don't, the Chinese, the Japanese, everybody else is not going to buy the products out of the United States. And it concerns me as if I had a wildlife refuge and had an elk on that wildlife refuge and anybody walked out there and seen animals that are in the condition, the ones that you can see up in Mount St. Helens now, they would call you folks. They would call the Humane Society. My picture would be posted on every television station, every newspaper in the state of Washington as being a criminal. They would fingerprint me in the courts and everything else for what's going on. You folks need to get with it. And if you don't have the expertise, go to the National Fish and Wildlife and say, hey, we don't have the money to do this, or the Food and Drug Administration or the Agriculture Department that checks out these things on our food to make sure that the food is safe. Because what's going to happen, eventually there's cows and people are circulating in those areas down there in Southwest Washington. They're going to come up with the same disease. And then what's going to happen? The Japanese, the Chinese, the people are buying our products, the chickens, everybody else that are going to get contaminated from this disease is going to quit buying the products. One out of every four people in the state of Washington depend on trade. You folks have an obligation as a citizen's representative, just like I did when I sat for 12 years as a transportation commissioner from 1995 to 2006 to represent the people of the state of Washington. And I think that the timber companies, and I hate to say this, I think what's happened is that when Mount St. Helens went up and Weyerhaeuser and them wanted to get the trees to grow back in a hurry, they dumped all of this fertilizer, massive amount of fertilizer in there to make the trees grow faster. They've sprayed them with everything under the sun. All of that stuff has got in the groundwater. It's got in the food source that the animals are eating. And that is basically is what's happened. Food and Drug, the Agriculture Department would be out there checking. They could tell you within a month just exactly where the cow was born, where its parents were born, everything else. You folks need to ask for some help. If you don't have the money, there are people above you that can get the money. Go to Jay Inslee, your new governor. He's supposed to be an environmental person. Ask him for help. If you don't have the money, and I know the legislature is going to say, well, we got to have transportation, we got to have education, we got to have everything. We got to protect the public interest. And that's what every one of you folks up there are supposed to be doing.
Okay. You were the last one signed up to talk about hoof rot. So, you were going to talk about it because I want to have a little conversation with the director. So let's hear from you, and then
okay,
we'll...
Thank you very much.
Okay, would Wayne Klein please come forward, too? Okay, Mr. Brown.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Robert Brown from Vancouver, Washington. I'm familiar with Mark Smith and the Eco Park and the North Tootle area, and I'm representing Callis Game and Anglers, other organizations. You remember Mount St. Helens eruption. And since then, the Corps of Engineers has constructed a dike upslope of Hofstad Bluffs that breached. This is a shaded relief map. There's a little volcanic plug up here that could be a backdrop or backstop or a place to deposit sediment from that eruption that is currently being blocked by the sediment retention structure dam that the Corps of Engineers just raised 7 feet earlier this summer. That is now filled with sediment and flock and flood and mud. Essentially a liquefaction flow. It has not lasted 5 to 7 years. It has raised the level of peripheral sediment and flooding, that is the only place left for the elk to walk and graze and feed in very microscopic small glass shards. And when they cross the sediment retention, the sacrifice zone, the floodplain in the summer, they get very microscopic lacerations. They poop and sleep around the area, and they walk on their own droppings. I'm suggesting that that could be a contributory cause to this bacterial and other viral multiple cause hoof rot. In addition, there is the possibility that the Corps of Engineers could select places, as I've just mentioned, to pile sediment. In the Columbia River, the Corps of Engineers is piling sediment on islands, dredge and store. Here, yet to be announced, the Corps is considering a 40-foot raise to the sediment retention structure, not just 7 feet. I would urge the Commission, in whatever way possible, to work with the National Marine Fisheries Service, Fish and Wildlife, Corps of Engineers, and the Cowlitz Tribe to urge a sediment management plan that allocates a small portion of the sediment area, and I'll pass this out to you, like between Alder and Deer Creeks, to create plateaus, to create uplands, like they're doing in the Columbia River, dredge and do something with the sand, so that the elk could have some habitat restoration in this area. The quality of the habitat might improve to the point that some of the hoof rot problem could be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Now we're going to change topics. But before we do, Director Henderson, can you give us an update on where things stand with the exploration of the cause of this problem?
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks everybody for coming and bringing this to our attention this morning. I think the way, the pathway forward here is for us to bring to the Commission a briefing on this topic in March, and make it a part of, because we're going to be, the Commission's going to be considering hunting seasons, of course, in your March-April timeframe. There, and as Commissioner Duvia said, we did talk about this, although rather briefly, in the Wildlife Committee meeting last night. And I think I would like to have staff come and present the facts to the Commission. There's a number of different ideas as to what the cause might be and what the remedies are. And I think, as several of the folks that testified indicated, that we don't have a specific cause identified for this problem, and there may be multiple factors that are contributing to it. And the other piece is, what types of influence does this have on our hunting seasons and regulations for elk in that area as we look at this problem? And I'm not prepared to get into a detailed conversation about this issue today. I would rather have the staff come to the Commission and provide you the briefing, the people that did the necropsies and looking at trying to identify the cause of this, whether or not there's outside expertise that some suggested that we may need to bring in to assist us with determining the cause and then identifying the solution. My guess is the solution isn't going to be easy, but the first place we've got to get to is to understand the cause, to figure out then what the remedies might be. So I will work with Executive Assistant Tammy in looking at the March agenda, and we may also want to think, do we want to do that in March when we're having a meeting in Moses Lake, as opposed to doing it in April where we'd be back here, so folks like these that are interested in hearing the report and discussing the issue could be present. So we'll that might be an additional consideration in terms of when we do it.
Okay. I'm sorry, we can't. But after, we'll take a little break afterwards, and you can ask your question. Commissioner Duvia?
Madam Chair, thank you. Just to add on to what the director says, I have been talking to several of the county commissioners in Southwest Washington the last 3 years, keep them posted of what they see as the development for the county, and a number of the hunters down there I know personally that have called me, and we've talked about the extent to where it's taken place. I've talked to the staff about it. I know we have dispatched some of our managers to talk with county commissioners to keep them posted of what's going on, and we have discussed what can we use for outreach to veterinarians, what can we find from the university science and what causes this, and how do we stop it. No one has come up with the magic button. But we are exploring outside sources. We're not beyond raising our hands and saying we don't know what the problem is. We need some help. So we have started that outreach process. This is a very difficult one to treat, as well as to diagnose where it comes from. But we're very concerned about it. And as I mentioned, we started to follow through and get more data requested from our wildlife committee last night. And we would want to take this into harsh considerations on seizing settings, and then we'll also get a better idea of exactly what the impact is, and then we'll start working with the staff and the director to figure out how fast we can fix this problem. So we're not ignoring it. We too have been concerned. It's a very difficult one that we haven't really faced before, and we don't really have a real easy answer yet, but we have the same breadth of concern that you share. We are very concerned about what we provide to you as citizens, and we are trying everything we can to protect and give the best opportunity for elk hunting we can. So if you guys got answers, we'd appreciate your choices. The couple that come up today is worth us following through and considering. So we appreciate that, and we will take that under advisement. So bear with us, and hopefully we'll get there faster than you hope for.
Okay. Excuse me. Ken Miller, would you come forward? Hey, Mr. Klein.
Good morning. I'm Wayne Klein from Mount Vernon. I'm looking at the future landscape of fishing in Puget Sound, specifically for salmon and steelhead. And what I think is going to happen is that catch and release fishing is going to be more of an opportunity. That's going to be the one place where you guys will be able to provide more fishing opportunity. The runs are above escapement occasionally, but they're not at historic levels. So I think catch and release fishing is going to be a major management tool. With this in mind, I looked at the WDFW website and searched for catch and release fishing education, and I found nothing. So I think this would be a good opportunity for the department to teach people about catch and release fishing. It's a pretty simple thing. It's not hard to teach, but it's amazing how many people don't know how to do it. There's a couple of items like the importance of single barbless hooks and not playing your fish too long. Keeping fish in water, I know that's in the regulations. It doesn't say how deep the water should be, so guys are kind of like sliding them up into about a half inch of water, and the fish flops around, bangs its head on the rocks. Not good for the fish, and a lot of people do not know what to do with a fish if it's bleeding. So I think there's a couple ways we could go. You guys have a website. You could put a video on there. It could be as simple as that. It could also be web-based, like a boater safeties course, where you could take a test and get a separate catch and release endorsement on your license. Somewhere in between is probably the best place. I don't know how we get something like this started, but I did notice in the statewide steelhead management plan that outreach and education is mentioned, and I think this would dovetail with that pretty nicely. And speaking of the plan, wild steelhead release, catch and release is mentioned indirectly 4 times and directly 8 times. So again, I think it's going to be an important future of our fishing opportunities, especially here in Puget Sound. And I would like to also mention that in April, there's a group of us that would like to come here and speak to you about restoring our catch and release season on the Skagit River. We think we kind of, that the feds threw the baby out with the bathwater, and we'd like to see if there isn't some kind of a remedy for that situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Jennings?
Okay, she's got a question. Yes. Are you familiar with circle hooks?
Somewhat. I know they're used a lot for fish like halibut, sturgeon, stuff like that.
So, for example, in Florida, a lot of the marine fisheries are required to use circle hooks because of the catch and release aspect of a lot of species, and as opposed to the J hooks, which often get caught or embedded deeper and get into the gills and cause issues. So, you know, just if you would think about or maybe explore on your own the possibility and your comfort with changing from J hooks to circle hooks if we start moving into a catch and release situation. And I'm not looking for a response now.
Right.
I'm sort of putting that out on the table for consideration.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Smith.
Yes, sir. Just triggered another idea. The video that you're talking about or something on the website, do you know if any other states have something like that that we could look at?
I don't. And I'll tell you what, I would be happy to work with the department on this. And if I can't do it, I can find somebody that will. So I haven't, to tell you the truth, I haven't looked.
I think that's a good idea, but I just, if it's already out there, something that we could just kind of pick and
copy and paste.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Anything else?
Okay, Mr. Miller.
Am I last?
Yes. Oh. But not
save the best for last. Madam Chair and members of the Commission, I'm Ken Miller. I've been here, I think, about the last 5 or 6 years with the same relatively small complaint and asking for plea. I represent a few of the small forest landowners that provide about half of this state's private forest land and habitat that all these folks are utilizing, yet we, for some reason, always remain relatively invisible unless we stand up here and complain a little bit. Bears will be start damaging our timber crop in about 2 months. I'm starting to get panicky. I'm not here to ask you today to do anything, just simply a polite reminder that I think it was in April, there were several of us that came and testified, and there were some commitments made. And I think one of the issues is the difference between small forest landowner and industry, because the agency's working with industry, and I think they've made a few changes there, but we're just a different breed of cats, and we're more trouble, I think. So maybe some sort of hotspot consideration, or the Master Hunter program seems to be working good, and you give those folks a little more slack, so maybe somehow or another I can get the same consideration. I do want to say that kind of at the last minute I was able to get a hold of Deputy Chief of Enforcement Mike Sensi, and he made a very strong commitment that he would address our issues, and they've just been swamped with other things, and I see your plate is quite full. I'm quite prepared to make a underlined strikeout on the boilerplate document about the few things that we have, and I'll send them to him and make it real easy for him. All he's got to do is accept. But I would like to include at least some of the commission members in that communication, just so you guys can kind of see what's going on. I think you were talking about last April having a little committee or something on that. Again, I'm not asking for folks to do anything, just maybe observe the process, and maybe that'll help us get to resolution. I don't want to come back here except for one more time, which I planned to do today, was to come back and thank the Fish and Wildlife and the Commission for the help that they have provided. So thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Commissioner Jennings?
Historically, along with bears, porcupines have been an issue for small forest landowners. Do you see many porcupines? Do you have problems with porcupines?
I do not have problems with porcupines. My sense is if folks have problems with those, they just kind of take care of it. And bears are a whole different situation. It takes, you have to have a real hunter up there. You just can't get bears on your own. So
do you have many porcupines? Do you see many porcupines?
I have in 20 years that we've lived on our current tree farm, which is right next to Miller Savine State Park. I think I've seen about 6 or 7
in 20 years.
Took care of them.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. So, Mr. Miller, would you CC Tammy when you communicate with Deputy Chief?
Okay. We'll be happy to do that. Thank you very much.
Okay. That concludes the open public input. And I thought because of the need for a little bit more communication with the people who've come here, and thank you, we've all made very effective presentations, we'd take a little break. But I commit to the commission that we are going to adjourn by 11:30, and we will have more opportunity to take up the meeting debrief in the conference call if necessary. We do have one blue sheet to address, and I think we'll defer committee reports, and we will have future opportunities to continue the discussion over the performance agreement. So while I'm going to call for a break, we are still on track to adjourn by 11:30. So let's come back in 10 minutes, about 20 after.